Baseball is all about tradition, but every home game brings something new. Just like Mio Sparkling Sake, crafted with time-honored Japanese brewing techniques, Mio delivers a modern twist. Slightly sweet, refreshingly effervescent, and as crisp as a perfect pitch. Whether you love sake or just want to discover something new, Mio is a crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. At Citi Field or at your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition. Served chilled. Brought to you by Takara Sake, proud sponsors of the New York Mets and the Rico Bronya podcast.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture. As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, hi there. Welcome into episode 637 of Rico Bronya. I am your host, Evan Roberts. We got a lot to cover. We are now a week into spring training. We will talk all about the goings-ons down in Port St. Lucie, Florida. We will hear from the owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen. We'll hear from both Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto, who have reported and have talked to the media for the first time. Some interesting things from Carlos Mendoza. And I thought about this long and hard. I announced a few weeks ago that we were going to do a Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball League. And the big issue is, well, how do you determine who's in the league? I mean, baseball fantasy leagues have 12 or 14 teams. How the hell do we determine which of you loyal listeners can enter this Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball League? Finally hit me. So coming up at the end of the podcast, I'll announce how you can enter the possibility of being in the Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball League. But with snow still on the ground, we are less than a week away from actual baseball games being played in Florida. I say this every year, but it's so true. When the Mets play their first spring training game, which for us will be Saturday, February 21st, a game that will be televised on SNY, thank God. I am geeky enough to take the scorebook out, to get it all ready, and to try to score the first spring training game of the year. I think I do it just about every year. And by the time I get to the eighth inning, I start to question what I'm doing with my life. And by the time we get to the third or fourth spring training game, I'm completely over it and I'm ready for the season to start. That doesn't mean that spring training doesn't have its levels of importance. In this year's case, we have a guy in Carson Bench who's trying to win a job. In this case, we've got multiple players learning new positions. So every rep matters. There will be bullpen spots on the line. So it's not as if it doesn't matter, but I know as a fan who loves baseball, who watches all 162 of the real games, spring training, I think as I've gotten older, it becomes staler and staler, earlier and earlier. With that said, we'll try to unstale it a little bit because we are taking the Rico Bronya down to spring training. We have announced the weekend of March 7th and March 8th. I think those are the exact days. Hold on one second. That's right, March 7th and 8th. We'll go down to spring training. So if you're heading down there or you're thinking of heading down there, say hello. We'll do a live show from Das Beer Garden in Jupiter, Florida, 4 o'clock on that Saturday, March 7th. And then we'll have another podcast on Sunday, March 8th. I don't know if that one will be open to the public. I'll let you know. Got to figure out where that one will be. But we'll have two Ricos down at spring training. And if you're going to the games, say hi. It's not that difficult to find me and not that difficult to find Hoff. A, Hoff's very big, so he's easily to notice. And B, these spring training games, they're small. You know, even a sellout, you're talking about 6,000 or 7,000 people. So you walk around the concourse, there's a decent chance you'll run into one of us. And it's funny, that weekend we're going, they play in Jupiter on Saturday, March 7th. I love Jupiter, love Roger Dean Stadium, and love Das Beer Garden. They've been great. We were there last year. It's an awesome location. It's sort of outside, sort of inside, right? You drink your beers. You're right near the stadium. The weather's usually beautiful. So I love going to Jupiter. It's a Met road game, which means God knows how many regular Mets will play. And then the next day, the Mets are playing the Yankees. And I've been racking my brain like the last time I went to a Mets-Yankees spring training game. They've played a bunch of times over the last couple of years. In fact, they're actually going to play next weekend in Tampa. That game will also be televised. So that's pretty cool. But I could be wrong about this. I could look in my archives because I am geeky enough to have kept track of this. I think the last time I went to a Yankee-Mets spring training game, the Yankees trained in Fort Lauderdale, which was a long time ago. I mean, we're talking like pre-interleague play. So Mets-Yankees in spring training was a little bit bigger of a deal. Either way, we're going down there. Should be a lot of fun. And I can promise you this. I'm not sure what time we'll do the Rico, but when they play their first game 1 week from yesterday, February 21st, I will score the game. Can't say I'm going to do it live. I may be on DVR. But eventually, Hoff and I will come together and we will do a Rico Bronya reacting to the first spring training game. That's a tradition. So if you're looking for instant analysis of the first Met game that they play in 2026, I can't guarantee it's going to be right after the game ends because there's a damn good chance Hoff and I will actually try to be good fathers and have lives and good husbands. But at some point on Saturday, February 21st, there will be a Rico Bronya responding, reacting to the first spring training game of 2026. Now, let's get down to business. A couple of news and notes, and then we'll hear from the manager, the owner, and the two-star players. Number one, Nick Castellanos. We spent a little bit of time talking about him on the mailbag edition of the Rico Bronya. That's episode 636, if you missed it. I was not a huge fan of pursuing Nick Castellanos. Well, neither were the Mets. They didn't pursue him. He ends up with the San Diego Padres on a one-year deal. Why I was against it, why it was not a move that enticed me, I'll summarize real quick. Now, I prefer giving Mark Vientos the real opportunity to be the right-handed designated hitter. I don't think that would have been the case if they pursued Castellanos. Number two, Griffin Canning also goes to the San Diego Padres. I'm mildly surprised by it. I thought that because Canning had some success last year and obviously had that gruesome injury against the Braves in June, I thought there was a decent chance that why not add him to the pitching depth? Why not throw him in there, rehab him a little bit, see if he can recover and see if he can be someone that helps you in the second half of the season? I don't know if that's an indicator that maybe Griffin Canning was someone more beloved by Jeremy Hefner than David Stearns in this current administration. I'm not sure. Or maybe the Mets just looked at their current pitching depth and thought by the time we get to the second half of the season, when Canning would likely be able to pitch, we feel Jonah Tong's going to be ready. We feel Christian Scott's going to be ready, as well as maybe two or three other young arms that emerge. And let's not forget, Jonah Tong emerged. It's not as if we went into spring training a year ago banking on Jonah Tong getting up here by the time we got to August and September. I mean, you go back to even June, July, whenever we started talking about Jonah Tong once he got on our radar, it was still assumed he wasn't going to help out at the major league level. So that could be part of it, that the Mets feel maybe in April, May, or June, we won't have that kind of pitching depth. But the time we get to the second half of the season, we feel such confidence in our system that we'll have more than enough young arms that could be options for our rotation if we need it, not necessarily Griffin Canning. So those are the two moves that occurred in Metland over the last couple of days. Now let's get to some of the interesting things we heard from Mendoza, Cohen, Lindor, and Soto. Unlike the David Stearns Ricos, where we listened to every last question, I was the editor in this case. I've listened to Carlos Mendoza every single day. He meets the media every single day. I listened to the Cohen interview with Howie Rose, which is a fine interview. You can check it out. I think that's on the Mets YouTube channel. And I heard Soto and Lindor. So I picked to me what I think is most interesting for us as the Rico audience. Let me start with the manager. The manager talks every day. And so eventually you start to think, boy, are there no new questions for Carlos Mendoza? So there were two things that jumped out at me in the last few days worthy of discussing. Let's start with Ronnie Mauricio. I have thought really since the end of last season that it was unlikely that Ronnie Mauricio was going to be on the major league team. And that a big part of why they kept him on the roster as long as they did last year was, yes, to manipulate the idea that they could have an option on him to send him down to the minors. If you recall, late last season, Ronnie Mauricio basically got buried. He was on the major league roster, but he never played. And it was revealed that, yeah, maybe the reason the Mets are doing this is that by keeping him up at the major league roster, they wouldn't be using one of his options, or one of his option years. And so Hoff and I actually argued about it. Hoff was like, this is ridiculous. We got to send him down. Let's bring someone up who can help this team. And my point was, while I get it, I understand wanting to have another guy on your roster that maybe you can use. I don't know how often you would have used this mysterious player, but there's a value to keeping that option on Ronnie Mauricio. Because in my eyes, I don't see an everyday spot for him to begin the season. And B, I think it's important he plays every day. I didn't feel that way about Luis Angel Acuña over the last year prior to them trading him. I thought he had a role on the major league level, even if it wasn't as an everyday player. And I didn't see the value necessarily as high as playing him all the time in the minor leagues. But I do see that with Ronnie Mauricio. Here's Mendoza's answer to the question of, hey, is it important for Ronnie Mauricio to play every day? Or could there be a role for him at the major league level where he's not playing every single day?
Yeah, playing time is going to be important for him. He spent the last 2 months last year and didn't get much of a playing time. He has that option, and we've been pretty clear and honest about that. It's all about his development. He missed a whole year, you know, and now when you talk to him, he's just happy to be in camp healthy without any restrictions. The past couple of years, there's always like a progression. You know, last year we didn't even see him in camp. Right now, this early, he's full go. So he's going to get an opportunity here. He's going to get some playing time. But when it comes down to make those decisions, that's going to be a factor too.
The Mets sort of made a mistake with him last year. And we're a part of it. Because, yes, I used this bully pulpit to scream and yell about calling Ronnie Mauricio up when he was pounding it in the minor leagues and looking at the Mets' holes that they had offensively early last season. And so I was banging the table. Hoff was banging the table. I was certainly a part of it. And he came up and he had his moments. You know, I remember the game-tying home run he hit against the San Diego Padres, a game they would eventually lose. But he had his moments. But he ended up really having a wasted season. He didn't get a lot of at-bats at the major league level. He ended up just kind of being here and not really having a chance to grow. I still think Ronnie Mauricio has a chance to be an impact bat at the major league level. I think there's a world in which he's the third baseman in 2027. I think there's a world in which he's the designated hitter, especially a guy who has such pop from both sides of the plate. I think it's going to behoove him to be in the minor leagues. And I look back to what happened last year, and yes, this is the ultimate Monday morning quarterback, but he would have been better off developing. As much as he was hitting down in AA and AAA for a very short period of time before the Mets called him up, and I get why. I get why we were screaming it. You know, we want the Mets to win. We thought he could contribute to them winning. But eventually it just became like he wasn't getting consistent playing time. So that answer tells you everything you need to know. Ronnie Mauricio is a lock to start the season in AAA. The other thing Mendy touched on, and this is going to be a topic that we will go deeper into as we get closer to opening day, is ABS. The automatic ball strike thing, basically where you can challenge, where you get two challenges per game to say, hey, as a hitter, that was not a strike, that's a ball. And obviously on the other side, a pitch is called a ball, you've got a chance to challenge it. I remember last year watching it in spring training. I didn't like it. My thought is, if you're going...
Baseball is all about tradition, but every home game brings something new. Just like Mio Sparkling Sake. Crafted with time-honored Japanese brewing techniques, Mio delivers a modern twist. Slightly sweet, refreshingly effervescent, and as crisp as a perfect pitch. Whether you love sake or just want to discover something new, Mio is a crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. At Citi Field or at your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition. Served chilled. Brought to you by Takara Sake. Proud sponsors of the New York Mets. And the Rico Bronya podcast.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on Five Star Style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Going to use computers. If you're going to use this kind of technology, I'd rather you just call everything. I'd rather there be an umpire behind the plate calling whatever he is being told. That's a ball. That's a strike. No need for strategies. No need for challenging. And no need for the delay in the outcome. Because that's the thing that from an entertainment perspective, that bothers me. It's one of the biggest issues the NFL has. You watch a play and then you're waiting for a flag. And then there's instant replay and you're waiting. And I think that while we have instant replay in baseball, and I accept that, if there's a way to not have us say, oh, that was called a ball, but wait a second, they're challenging it. Let's wait the 10 seconds to find out. And I know it's not the 10 seconds. It's not the length of time. It's the instant reaction, the excitement of that was strike three. Oh, wait, it's not. Or that was ball four. Oh, wait, no, it's not. I feel if you have the technology, I'd rather you just do it on every single pitch. So my first impression from ABS last spring was I didn't love it. But what is going to be the strategy behind ABS? Every team may have a different one. Are you not going to allow your pitchers to challenge something called a ball? Are you not going to challenge or allow your hitters to have free will to say, hey, that's not a strike, that's a ball? How will you deploy ABS? Here's Carlos Mendoza discussing the strategy, the potential strategy of ABS in 2026.
A lot of meetings about the ABS and the strategies and things like that. The biggest thing for me, I want players to be baseball players, right? I want pitchers to pitch. I want hitters to hit and catchers to catch the baseball. You know, I don't want hitters trying to be an umpire. I don't want pitchers to be an umpire. They got to go out there and play the game. As spring training progresses, we'll see. Everybody's going to be free to challenge in spring training. If they want to challenge, go ahead. And then we're going to start tracking who's good and who's not. And then we'll come up with some guidelines, right? But yeah, so right now it's pretty fluid. We're going to go out and try it and go from there.
It's got to be a player decision because you got to challenge quick. This isn't one of those things where on a bang bang play at first base, you got the time to look back and see what your replay guy is telling you. It does need to be the player issuing the challenge or not. He was laughing, but it's kind of true. Like if Francisco Alvarez proves to be really good as a hitter, identifying if you should challenge or not, then give him free reign. It doesn't necessarily have to just be Juan Soto because we all respect his eye. If you are good, like really good at identifying, hey, that's a BS call, then you may as well challenge it. Because my understanding is if you challenge it and you're right, you get the challenge back. So it's not as if you're risking anything other than getting it wrong. So I'm going to keep track of this too, Hoff. I want to see who challenges and gets it right. And maybe that will be an indicator on who's allowed to challenge once the season starts.
So this came up. I was watching MLB Network and this came up and they said it has to be quick and they can't get help from anyone.
So it's got to be the player.
Right. But they can't even look at the manager. Like they said that the umpires are going to be focused on like if they try to look back to get some help, like it doesn't make a difference. Got to come from a player. Can't get any assistance. My question to you, though, is that for the catcher as well? Is it yes. Only the batter that can make?
I'm going to read you the rules. We'll all read the rules together because I think this may be one of the other interesting things about spring training to just see how it's used, who's using it, if they're successful and whatnot. When they did it last year, it was more like a circus freak thing. It was like, yeah, what do you think? Who cares? They're not using it during the season. So right. It was just, hey, what do you think? Now it's actually instructive to really analyze it, but here are the rules. All right. Two challenges per team. They are kept if successful. So the way I interpret that is you could challenge 55 times if the umpire keeps getting it wrong. Unlike the NFL, where if you get two right, you get a third. My interpretation of reading this is two challenges per team kept if successful, which means they keep going. Okay. If that's not true, I'll let you know. But as of right now, that's my interpretation. Only the pitcher, the catcher, or the batter can initiate. Now, keep this in mind. Even though they are the only ones that could initiate it, I don't think there'd be a rule necessarily against Carlos Mendoza screaming to Marcus Semien, challenge it!
You know what I mean? Like, yes, Marcus Semien is the one who has to tap his hat or helmet. But when you say it only can be initiated by them, it doesn't mean, oh, wait, hold on. Let me get to rule number four. No dugout or teammate is allowed to help. So I guess that's, you can't scream it then. All right. So I take that back.
All right. Here's the other question. How about if the crowd screams it out? Like, challenge that mother effer.
Then it's allowed. Then it's okay. But that's a weird one. So no dugout or teammate can help. What happens if the on-deck hitter does say you should challenge that? Does that mean the umpire is going to rule you're not allowed to challenge that because your on-deck hitter said something? Same thing with at shortstop, right? So a pitch is called a ball, and Lindor at shortstop, who's got a pretty good view, screams, that's BS, challenge it. Does that kind of stuff eliminate your ability to challenge it since the rule says no dugout or teammate help is allowed? This is a weird one, man. We're going to have to experience it to really see.
And I'm going to tell you right now, we thought that the garbage pail was an issue back in the day. You're telling me that there's not going to be somebody from the Mets or from any organization sitting in those seats and being like, hey, listen, I got an iPad or whatever it is, or I got a good eye, and I'm just screaming from here, but I'm not involved with the organization. They can plant people around. It's going to be very dicey this first year. Let's go. Yeah. People are going to get kicked out. I can't wait.
People are going to be kicked out for helping when they're not supposed to help, apparently. Take this for what it's worth, and it is sort of related, but I saw this tweet from Joe Schad, who I think covers the Dolphins for ESPN. So not a baseball guy, but he wrote, according to Jeff Agrest of the Chicago Sun-Times, in fact, off Google this and tell me if Jeff Agrest of the Chicago Sun-Times is worth trusting, because Jeff Agrest claims MLB broadcasts will no longer show on-screen strike zone boxes as the league is exercising caution to ensure teams cannot exploit the broadcast to their advantage when challenging pitches. So it's funny. We're sitting here going through all the different things like players can do and teams can do. And one by one, we're realizing, oh, wait, they actually have rules to make sure that doesn't happen. So that's a disservice to us as fans, though, because one of the features on an MLB game broadcast that I think we appreciate is the strike zone box. And I think it's a part of why we're so critical of umpires, because we see it. We're like, oh, well, that's clearly a ball. You watch some of these old games. If you did any of the rewatches with us during the offseason, there is no box. So it's a guess. It's just looking at it old school wise to determine if something's a ball or a strike. So we will suffer from that as viewers if this report is true. And I have every reason to believe it is, based on especially Hoff's idea of someone basically sitting in the stands looking at it and saying, oh, that's a ball, challenge it. This is going to be fascinating. This is going to be fascinating to watch. But my gut feeling is I think Mendy has it right. There are going to be certain players on your team who've got absolute free reign. Because even if, let's take a rookie like Carson Benj. No shade on him. But should Carson Benj be allowed to challenge a pitch in the second inning of a game where if he gets it wrong, that could possibly impact Juan Soto challenging a pitch in the eighth inning of the game? I mean, the answer is no way. So I think one of the rules you almost need to have is situational. Hey, it's not worth it here. And I know sometimes that's tough to realize. Like, you never know when a big inning is going to come out of nowhere. Just because there's two outs and nobody on and your eighth place hitter is up in the second or third inning doesn't mean an 0-2 pitch that was called a strike that's really a ball won't lead to some crazy 8-9, 1-2-3-4 rally. But I think there's going to have to be situational awareness and certain players getting more leeway than others. But definitely worth keeping an eye on. And clearly, based on some of these rules and some of the ways MLB is impacting it, we may have to do an entire Rico about the ABS. So get ready for that one. That'll get a lot of downloads. Anyhow, who else should we hear from? We've heard from Carlos Mendoza. How about Steve Cohen? Steve Cohen did a long-form interview with Howie Rose. They do it every single year. If you can get past the fact that Howie Rose had a picture of Aaron Judge in his background, which, if you didn't notice, that was very distracting, and luckily Howie Rose has addressed it. Basically, it's my company's fault. It's Odyssey's fault. how he's redoing his office. And they sent this beautiful dueling cover, one of Aaron Judge, one of Howie Rose, to kind of celebrate Odyssey having the Yankees and having the Mets. And so, unfortunately, the Judge part was the part that you could see on the interview, but it was still very well done. So a couple of things Cohen said that I thought were interesting. I'll include some of the questions from Howie. Let's start with Pete Alonso, because obviously Pete is a guy that we were very focused on early on in the offseason. We were skeptical. Did the Mets ever want him back? Would Steve Cohen get involved in bringing him back? Here's Howie's question about Cohen's involvement and his answer concerning Pete Alonso and inevitably him leaving to sign a five-year deal with the Orioles.
Last year, apparently, you interceded with Alonso and got a deal done pretty late in the offseason. Did it ever come to anything close to that with Pete this year, you getting involved and maybe kind of pushing where the original, whether it was budget or term limit, was set further ahead?
Yeah, I think under the right circumstances, we could have gotten something done. But we weren't going to go 5 years. He got a great offer. And, so we just decided it wasn't going to work for us.
I mean, that's as straightforward as it comes. And I think that's the truth. I think sometimes we go to extremes on this. Like, one extreme is they hated Pete Alonso. They never wanted him back. They never wanted him back on a 5-year deal. And I think Cohen's answer and what happened last year is proof that they would have brought him back on a shorter deal. They were never going to 5 years. You just heard it from the man himself. And we could hate it. We could disagree with it. We could whatever. Doesn't matter. There is your truth. And I think it's been the truth for the last 2 years. They liked the player. They wanted the player back, but they only wanted the player back on their kind of conditions. How about Edwin Diaz and what happened with those negotiations, Mr. Cohen?
Is there anything about what went down with the Diaz negotiations that hasn't come out yet that you could share with us?
Well, you know, I did find that one perplexing and not sure exactly how Edwin arrived at that decision. You know, obviously it's a personal decision on his part. I thought we made a pretty respectable bid, and I could argue our bid might have been better than the Dodgers when you include.
Baseball is all about tradition, but every home game brings something new. Just like Mio Sparkling Sake. Crafted with time-honored Japanese brewing techniques, Mio delivers a modern twist. Slightly sweet, refreshingly effervescent, and as crisp as a perfect pitch. Whether you love sake or just want to discover something new, Mio is a crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. At Citi Field or at your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition. Served chilled. Brought to you by Takara Sake. Proud sponsors of the New York Mets. And the Rico Bronya podcast.
Furniture shopping can be overwhelming. There are so many options, and it's hard to know what's actually worth it. That's why I always turn to reviews to guide my decisions. If something has hundreds of 5-star reviews, I'm paying attention. And Bob's Discount Furniture has tons of highly rated pieces that make choosing a whole lot easier. Like their Elm dining set, which has over 700 5-star reviews. It's a gorgeous setup with a real marble table and comfortable Bobapedic seating that instantly upgrades your dining space. And at $9.99, it's a super approachable way to get that high-end look. Or check out Bob's Copper Radiance Queen Extra Firm Mattress. Over 400 5-star reviews and recommended by Consumer Reports. It's designed with a copper-infused cover and high-density Bobapedic foam for support. Plus, it comes with a 20-year warranty. And if you're looking for a sofa upgrade, the Modular Bob Sectional is a customer favorite with over 1,000 5-star reviews. It's got soft, durable upholstery, storage, wireless charging, and starts at just $250 per piece, so you can customize it without overthinking it. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry.
We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And you have that fourth conditional year that I don't think people really were talking about in his contract. But you know, he made his decision, and I'll tell you something. I mean, when it was getting pretty hot and heavy, you know, when this was coming down, I felt pretty good about the fact that we had signed Devin Williams, and I described it to David. That was pretty clever because it was a really good hedge, and you know, in case there was an unfavorable outcome with Edwin.
A pretty good hedge signing Devin Williams. So the comment of it being perplexing, Erdy got back to Edwin Diaz, and Edwin was asked in Arizona, hey, what do you think of Steve Cohen calling your decision perplexing? Here's Edwin Diaz's response, quote, I was a free agent, so I got the chance to talk with everyone. And I think the Dodgers did a great job recruiting me. At the end of the day, I chose to be here. I have a lot of respect for the Mets organization, players, staff, and ownership. They treated me really good. I don't have anything bad to say about them, but at the end of the day, I'm here. There's a new journey for me, and I'm happy to be with the Dodgers, so let's see how it goes. I look at Cohen's answer, I look at Diaz's answer, and you try to figure out, all right, what really did happen? And I think there are going to be many who say, Edwin just wanted to go to the team that's got the best chance to win a championship. And that's a very simple answer and a real answer. It's an answer that's very tough to argue. The Dodgers are back-to-back world champions. In a bad year, they will make the playoffs. Edwin Diaz may get 100 save opportunities this year if he's healthy. So that is a conclusion a lot of people are going to jump to. It may be the right conclusion. That, simply put, while he liked being here, once the Dodgers were involved, he just wanted to go to L.A. I think there may be something, though, to the fact that the Devin Williams signing, which Steve Cohen said was great insurance, or however the heck he phrased it, could have pissed him off. And I know that was leaked out right after Diaz went to L.A., and some have argued against that. I could see why it would. You know, I think that communication is very, very important. And he is a free agent, but you still can communicate with him. You can still communicate with his agent. And maybe the Mets needed to have better bedside manner in making clear to Edwin Diaz that despite us signing an elite-level closer, our primary goal is to bring you back. Is it possible, even though Edwin Diaz hasn't said it yet, that he was so sensitive to the Devin Williams signing that pushed him further away? I think that's on the table, too. But what I've also realized, especially as we talk about this on February 15th, is I'm done. And I think we all are. I'm done. We played this clip because Steve Cohen talked about it. But from here on out, relitigating what happened with Edwin Diaz to me is a colossal waste of time. He's gone, and there's nothing we can do about it. Let's move on. Steve Cohen was asked about the pursuit of Kyle Tucker and how they were able to so quickly go from all in on Kyle Tucker to signing Bo Bichette within 24 hours. Here's Steve Cohen elaborating on that situation.
They were talking to Bo while, you know, we were in the middle of the Tucker conversation, right? I mean, there was no guarantee that Tucker was going to come to us. And frankly, you know, and once it was all done and we got, you know, Bo to come to the Mets, I actually feel Bo might be a better fit for the team. And so I think things worked out for the best. Listen, I did a Zoom with Kyle and that was good Zoom. And you know, I was hoping that it would, you know, move it forward in some way. But obviously, whatever the reason was, you know, our bid was in some respects was better than the Dodgers. So it was, once again, it's a player making a personal preference. And that's what happens in free agency.
It's kind of simple, you know, when it's two now and it may happen again down the road. The L.A. Dodgers are the destination. And I hope there's a day where the New York Mets are the destination. I think the Mets are in a place in which they're much more appealing than they were 4 years ago in terms of free agents coming here. But they're not the Dodgers. And I think you could ask the Yankees the same thing. I think they're dealing with the same thing. The Yankees, as appealing as they are, they're not the LA Dodgers from a weather standpoint, but obviously from a success standpoint. And we spent a lot of time talking about Kyle Tucker. And the main reason I never believed they were going to sign him was exactly what happened. That I thought if the money and the years were similar, and in the case of Diaz and Tucker, it was all similar. Cohen says, well, our offer was kind of better. Kind of better or not, it was close. And right now, you're not winning a close race against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Last one from Steve Cohen that I thought was interesting. Are you better now than you were last year? And this is going to be a theme because we're going to hear from Soto about this, Lindor about this. Here's the owner in terms of the Mets in a better place today than they were at the end of last season.
You feel with the moves that have been made between trades and free agency that you're in a better place now organizationally than you were when last season ended?
I'm excited by this team. I mean, it's different than the team we had, you know, last year. But, I mean, a lot of these players that we got are playoff tested. Gamers, what I would call gamers in the sense that they performed in, you know, high pressure situations. I expect this team to be a playoff team. So having players like this that have performed in those situations really gets me excited.
That's the headline. I mean, not a surprising headline. I expect them to be a playoff team. And I think that the bar for this team between a successful season and a disastrous season starts with the postseason. Now, I'm old enough. I'm in my 40s now. There are many people out there. We don't remember 1986. It was a long time ago. They're going to have their 40th anniversary this season. I'm 42. That's all you need to know. 86, even though I was on the earth, is not something I remember. So I think I'm at the point where the only true success is winning a world championship, but I also want to be fair and I want to be reasonable. I think at the bare minimum, they need to be a playoff team. And certainly Steve Cohen expects that. I want to jump ahead, Hoff, with one of Lindor's answers because I want to keep it similar. Cohen just said, hey, I think we're better than we were last year. Francisco Lindor, I got four cuts from Lindor, but I want to jump to the one in which he's asked, why do you think you're better this year than last year? Very specific question, because Lindor was also talking about the place that they're in, of being in a better place than they were a year ago. And we did a podcast on this about a week ago where we were all kind of analyzing, hey, are they better off? Like, are the Mets a better team? Now, you'd expect the players to say it. You would expect the owner to say it. Obviously, us, me, you, the Rico listeners, were very different. We're not obligated to say it. But let's jump to Lindor being asked, hey, why do you think the Mets are better this year than last year? And let's hear Lindor's breakdown on that.
Francisco, you said, I feel this team is better than last year. Why? What elements do you think this team has that last year's didn't?
I mean, if you go position by position, it's definitely better, you know. I don't know the budget, if we are up or equal or below what we were last year. But, you know, you have a guy like Clay Holmes starting for a second year, you know, it's going to be good. You have Nolan McLean, that he's going to be definitely better. You have Freddie, you have Petey, Manaya, Senga being healthy at this time of year. Then you go through a bullpen, you know, we have good guys, and then you go through the infield and outfield, and I feel like we have what it takes. You know, they address the defense, they address the base running, they address the hitting, they address the pitching.
You agree with that, Hoff? Because I know you were a little bit more on the fence on if this team is better or not. And to the credit, oh, somebody's calling me. Let me decline that. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Do you buy his answers on them being better?
No. I think his reasons are the reason why I'm questioning. You know, we got better. Why? Because, you know, another year of Nolan McLean. Yeah, but he pitched 8 games last year. Do we know that that's who Nolan McLean's going to be? The Freddy Peralta one, I'll give him that. But everything else is basically like question mark, question mark, question mark. It's not great.
He glossed over the bullpen, rightfully so, because I mean, they can be better. I mean, bullpens are fickle from year to year, but you're trying to replace one of the best closers in baseball, and that's always a tough challenge. The position player thing is very mixed. I mean, he said, if you go position by position, well, we could all go position by position right now, and what you'll see is it's very mixed. Like, you can't say they're better at first base. You can't say that. I mean, even if Jorge Polanco learns how to play a mean first base, taking the leap that he's better than Pete Alonso is a really massive leap. Saying Bo Bichette is better than the production they got out of third base last year is completely fine. I'm not going to go Soto to Nimmo because they're switching positions. You basically have to look at Carson Benj, Tyrone Taylor, Brett Beatty versus Brandon Nimmo. And I don't think that's a slam dunk. We'll see what the production is out of right field. Center field has to be better. Like, by accident, the production in center field has to be better. But my point is, if you go position by position, Francisco, it's mixed. Like, there's some areas where they're better. There's some areas where they may take a step back. I do overall think they're better. And I think the best case you can make is the rotation, because Freddie Peralta for 30 plus starts, Nolan McClain, even though you're right, we don't know what he is, I think we have a lot of confidence that he's going to be really good. And he only made a handful of starts last year. So I think the rotation, I feel a lot better about being better from last year than this year. But I thought those were interesting answers from Lindor. And he was also asked about the amount of changes that were made, because that is the thing that jumps out at you, certainly as a Met fan, not only going into the offseason thinking how many changes are going to be made, but sitting here today talking about how different this roster is. They are completely different. So many changes. So Lindor was asked about, were you surprised that this offseason went the way it went?
Were you surprised at how many new faces and how much overhaul there was in the offseason?
I would say yes and no. You know, when the year didn't end the way we all wanted it, it's a business, and you have a feeling that every year is not going to look the same. Stearns is one of the best, and his group, they're great. So it was interesting to see how they went about it the whole offseason. It seemed like it was quiet, and then all of a sudden it wasn't quiet, and then went back to being quiet, and they did a really good job. I'm full on board with how they did it, and I'm looking forward to this year.
Well, I'm glad the unofficial captain didn't come in and say, this offseason blew. that wouldn't have gone well. So whether you agree with them or not, I am certainly glad that the unofficial captain is saying, hey, I trust David Stearns. I like what they did. And he addresses the roller coaster nature of it. Also, Lindor addressed what they lost from the roster. Because when you talk up how much better the team is, which is fine, we have to acknowledge that Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo and Edwin Diaz and even Jeff McNeil were pretty good Mets. So here's a little bit of Lindor addressing what they lost from last year's roster.
Definitely need a win. We definitely didn't do what it takes to win a championship. The ultimately comes down to winning. And what left, I mean, great guys, great teammates, great players. Those organizations that got the players that were here, they got really good people, really good guys that are going to help that clubhouse and going to help them win. And I felt like whenever Stearns, Cohen, and the whole front office makes a decision, is for the better of the organization. And I feel like this team is better than last year.
Thinks they're better than last year. Made that very, very clear. I'm going to save the locker room stuff because I'm going to bunch it together between Lindor and Juan Soto. So let me jump to Soto giving us his perspective on the move to left field. That was obviously the first piece of surprising news coming into spring training, that he's moving from right field to left field. So here's Soto discussing kind of what led to the decision to make that switch and how it all came about.
We just were talking, me and Mendoza. He was asking me where you're going to play in WBC. And we just talked about, I told him I'm going to play left field in WBC. And he asked me if I feel comfortable there. I told him I'm comfortable everywhere. Everywhere he put me, I'd be willing to do it. I don't care. Whatever is going to help the team, I'm open to do it. And he was like, him and David then started talking about it. And as a team, we come up with it.
So a few of you guys emailed this. And I think you guys are right. You know, sometimes you need a few days. You need to hear other perspectives. You need to hear from Juan Soto, hear from David Stearns, hear from Carlos Mendoza. But I think those that wrote the emails, and we did a lot of this on the Rico mailbag on episode 636, but a few people suggested, Evan, David Stearns always wanted to move Juan Soto to left field. And the reason he said, oh, it took us by surprise, like we weren't planning on it, there's no metrics that show us we're better, is because he didn't want to insult Juan Soto. He didn't want to come out and say, hey, you know what? Left field's an easier position to play at Citi Field than right field. We don't have noodle arm Brandon Nimmo anymore, who couldn't play right field. We really want to make this change. And it does kind of feel, based on the description of the Mendoza-Soto talks and the nature of the way David Stearns described things, I am starting to think the Mets always wanted to make this change. That they knew what I knew a year and a half ago, which is that Soto is built to play left field at Citi Field. And A, they had the Nimmo problem last year. And then B, they didn't want to make it a demotion. They didn't want to make it a, hey, you suck in right field, we want to move you to left field. And so the discussion between Mendy and Soto feels like when the girl's breaking up with you, but you end up breaking up with her because she didn't want to dump your ass. And so she just made it very clear, I don't really like being with you. And then you took it as, you know what? I think we should break up. And so you get to tell your buddies, oh, I broke up with her. But the reality is she didn't want to be with you anymore. And not that the Mets are dumping Juan Soto, but the Mets didn't want him to play right field anymore. So the more you hear from Soto, from Mendoza, from Stearns, I think you guys are right. So good job by you. This is why I love interacting with the Ricoers out there, because my first reaction is David Stearns, you know, sounds like he was unprepared. What do you mean you never thought about moving him to left field? How do you not think about that? So I get the sense that's what happened. It's a good move. Ultimately, this is something that the moment the Mets signed him, it made sense. So I'm glad they went in that direction. All right, let's get to the locker room. The thing that I always say is not a big deal. The Mets struggled last year. They couldn't pitch. They couldn't get big hits. Look for the baseball reasons, not the clubhouse reasons. Well, both Lindor and Soto were asked about the clubhouse. Let's start with Lindor. Lindor was asked flat out, address the chemistry and the locker room from 2025.
Did you say Soto or Lindor? Sorry.
I'm sorry. Francisco Lindor. We'll start Thank with you. Lindor. Lindor asked about the chemistry from 2025.
Francisco, there's been questions this offseason about chemistry on the team and in the clubhouse. Can you address that as far as guys getting along and pulling for each other?
Yeah, I mean, we've always pulled for each other. We always wanted what's best for each other. Are we all best friends? That's not how it works in the clubhouse, but we are friends. We're good teammates. We care for each other. We love each other, and we want the best for each other, you know, and we have a lot of new faces here that guys seem like they're going to work hard and they're going to do whatever it takes to win. You know, ultimately that's what it comes down to. It's all about winning and everybody pulling in the same direction.
So a very non-answer answer, you know, yeah, we're not all best friends, but it was a professional locker room. We all pulled for each other. All good. I want to get to Soto, and I kept these three questions together because it was bang, bang, bang for Juan Soto. And you know what? I'm not going to say anything. I want everybody to hear it. All right. Three questions in a row for Juan Soto about Lindor, the locker room, the clubhouse, and tell me what you think of Juan Soto's answers.
Juan, how would you describe your relationship with Francisco Lindor?
I think it's a great relationship. We talk all the time in the game and everything. We help each other.
Carlos Mendoza has described the clubhouse last year as maybe getting a little bit too corporate at times. What was your perception of it?
As in the past. We forget about it. We focus in 2026.
Focusing on 2026, how could you maybe prevent that from happening this time around?
Have fun. Forget about all the drama and everything. Focus on the game and win some ball games.
That was very different. I mean, Hoff, I don't know if that's the first you heard of it, other than obviously me sending it to you, but give me your first response to the Soto answer, because that was a little different from Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Soto is very businesslike too. I can't tell, quote unquote, where the fun is supposed to come from. I don't. But there's clearly a line that has been divided in that clubhouse. And they're on two different pages. They just are. And that's fine. But they're on two different pages. And I don't think Soto really wants to get involved with the team. I don't think he wants to.
How did you get that from his answer? Like that, yeah, those are all like out there rumors. I'm not denying those are rumors, but based on Juan Soto's answers, you got that from Juan Soto's answers?
Yeah, he was very short. I think they questioned him on the business, and the business is him. He's the business.
I took that very, very differently. First of all, I think his Lindor answer was, we're good. We talk every day. All good. Like he didn't. There was nothing bad that came out of that. Just, we have a good relationship. Maybe we're not best friends, but all good. It was the second parts. When he was asked about last year's locker room, he didn't say it was fine. He said, that's the past. Like, basically what Mark McGwire said in front of Congress when asked about steroids. So that answer almost felt like an acknowledgement that the locker room was bad last year. And then the follow-up of, what can you do? And he says, forget all the drama from last year. I didn't take that, even though we have the rumors of him and Lindor struggling to get together. I didn't take that as a Lindor thing. I took it as something else because Lindor's here. And his answer to Lindor was, no, we're good. No problems. But then when asked about the locker room last year, I don't want to talk about it. And then into, we'll leave the drama to last year. So I don't know if that means it involves some of the guys who are not here. I don't know what the hell it means, but there was more of a forthcoming nature to Juan Soto's answer than Lindor's. Lindor's was all just kind of, yeah, you know, we're not all best friends. It's fine. We got to play better. Like very generic answers. And Soto's non-answers were almost an answer confirming that the locker room sucked last year, but not much of a concern about this year, which leads me to think it's not a Lindor Soto issue. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I will tell you two things, too. Lindor's answers are based off of him learning the New York media a lot more than Soto. Lindor has gone through it. He had the rat raccoon stuff. He's had a lot of other issues that he learned very early on when he came to New York. So I think he's learned how to answer, give enough information, and not worry about, oh, there's going to be a follow-up. I gave enough out there. Soto was so short, so to the point, he left a lot of room. Like, what's the one thing that we learned, by the way, with asking questions? Don't build a question up. Short, sweet, let them walk into something.
Right.
Soto gave you nothing. Soto was like,
well, he gave you nothing, but he also basically gave you something because it sounded like he confirmed there was drama last year. That's how I would take it.
Yeah, he was honest, but he's not going to dive into it.
Yeah.
And I think that there is, I don't think it's done. I think there's still issues here. And I don't even say Lindor Soto. I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of other things going on that Soto is just going to be a different player than everybody else. And I'm okay with that. I have no problem with how Soto presents himself. As long as they win, I don't care.
How about this interpretation from Dan, who's a loyal Rico listener? Dan writes, anyone else get the feeling Juan Soto looks and sounds 1,000% more comfortable up there at the podium? It's almost giving me the sense that this might really start becoming his team, as it should be, now that the core has been nuked. It's going to be even more of an interesting dynamic with Lindor if Soto really becomes the guy and basically takes his team away from him. I always felt Lindor would be better as a sidekick, but getting him to embrace that role, especially with a guy he reportedly doesn't get along with and not be butthurt about it, might be a different story. So I don't know. I don't know if I get a sense Soto's more comfortable, but maybe he is. That's a good interpretation. I almost have to go back and watch Soto's 2025 spring press conferences and compare them.
I will tell you this much. Him walking in with Luis Robert Jr., they seem to be very chummy.
Good.
And that seems to be a different good Soto. So
get him going. Get him freaking going. I mean, if one Soto is going to unlock Luis Robert Jr., that is, you talk about being worth every penny. I mean, that'll add to it. Now, we had mentioned a few weeks ago that I was finally open to doing a Rico Bronya fantasy baseball league. A few people had suggested it over the years, and I think the time is now. Why the hell not? Let's have some fun. But the reason I hadn't brought it up for the last few weeks is because I couldn't figure out a proper way to determine who's in the league. We have a lot of listeners. A lot of people listen to the Rico. A lot of people would want to be in a fantasy league like that. So how do we make it fair? And so it hit me. It hit me while I was watching Adam Silver, the incredibly incompetent commissioner of the NBA, a sport I still love. We need a lottery. Except unlike the NBA, where teams are tanking to get more lottery balls, we need a fair lottery. So what I ask you is anybody out there that wants to participate in a Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball League, email us. I think that's the fairest way, not Twitter responses, nothing else. Email us, therico@gmail.com, and make it short and sweet. But here's the information I want for you to enter the lottery. I want your name and your team name, okay? Your fantasy team names. I want you to think about what you're going to label your team, what you're going to call your team. Send in your name and your team name, and you will officially be entered into the Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball Lottery. And then, live on a future Rico, I'll have it in front of me. So you'll see it ain't like I'm not lying. I'm not cheating. There's no, picking someone I want. There's no, frozen envelope like Patrick Ewing all those years ago. We will have a lottery and we will draw your name and your team name out and you'll get determined if you're in the fantasy league. To be fair, because I do want to be fair, if you're in it this season, you won't be able to be in it next season unless you win the championship. If you win the championship in this league, you automatically are invited back for 2027. So this will be fair. If you don't get in this year, there will be an opportunity next year. And that's how we will determine the Rico Bronya Fantasy Baseball League. Now, the only people in the league besides you guys will be a team of me and a team of Hoff. That's it. No one else from WFAN, I don't care who asks, they're not invited. All right? It's me, it's Hoff, and it's all of you. So if you'd like to enter for the possibility of being in the Rico Bronya Fantasy League, email us, therico@gmail.com.
Now, I do want to be honest here. There's got to be one other person that's part of this.
Oh, the person who, suggested it?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice.
That's a good point.
So, okay, now we're down to 9 spots.
Well, one thing we do need to determine is it should be a 12-team league or a 14-team league. It should be 12, right?
Well, how about 15 because there's 15 NL teams? No, we can't do that, right?
No.
Sorry. I was trying to match it up with the – okay. We could do 14. 14's good.
All right. We'll do 14, and I've got it. Do you remember the person who suggested the fantasy league so we can
– Email us if you were the one who emailed
us. Don't do that. No. Do not do that because we're going to get 100 people claiming they're the person. I will figure it out.
Yeah,
fine. We'll go through the email and make sure we've got it figured out. So if you want to enter the Rico, I have one other thing that you can email me about, and I'm not even kidding. That no joke. This is unrelated but related. And I was going back and forth if I would bring this up on the Rico, but I think I actually should bring it up on the Rico. It's the best place to bring it up. So I have 4 season tickets for the New York Mets, and I will probably take my entire family once a homestand where I use all 4 tickets. The rest of the time, I got to sell them, and I hate doing it. I hate selling tickets, pain in the ass. I don't want to be a ticket broker. So anyone who's interested, and I'm not talking about buying a game or two, someone who would be interested in being like a real partner on Met Tickets, you could join my group. And I'm very fair. Like you get half the games, you'll get playoff games too. You don't just take crappy games, you get good games as well. If you're interested seriously in doing that, I'd appreciate it because my wife may make me give up the extra 2 tickets if I can't get rid of them. So you'd be doing me a favor, but I'd be doing you a favor because, as Hoff will tell you, I got awesome seats. So anyone who's seriously interested in that, let me know because, yeah, that's my challenge this year with my beautiful wife and really being a season ticket holder. It's tough, man, because I can't go to every game, but I certainly can't use all 4 tickets for every game. So.
Yeah, and they are great. They're fantastic. They're like above home plate. It's amazing view. Best view in the house. And then on top of that, you're going to get a lot of people swinging by and be like, where's Evan? So you'll have a lot of conversations that day.
Well, not only that, there'll be a lot of games where I'll be there and we'll just be We'll be sitting next to each other. Because like I said, I go to a lot of games. It's just, it's very tough to use all four. But because both of my sons love going to games, I just knew I had to have four. It's like one of those weird things where you know it's a terrible investment. You're not doing it for investment purposes. You're doing it because your boys love going. And they're at an age right now where I can't take them to every game. It's not like on a Tuesday night, I'm going to use all four tickets. I'm probably going to switch off between boys or probably just take my oldest because he's old enough to go to weeknight games. And then, yeah, there's that Saturday or Sunday game where I'll use all four. So if you're interested, let me know. If not, no big deal. Anyhow, we appreciate you listening and downloading the Rico Bronya. We give you new episodes basically every other day, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss another episode of the Rico. Coming up this week, I'm still compiling it, but the 10 things I am most intrigued about by Mets spring training. We'll go through the biggest questions and storylines of this spring training, and obviously we're less than a week away from game numero uno. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing. Another edition of the Rico. Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.